This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. The clock is ticking on unemployment benefits. If you're in between jobs and you already know this, stay with us. But some may not be aware that states provide most of the unemployment benefits that are sustaining those out of a job during the pandemic slowdown. But the federal government has also been kicking in $600 a month in extra cash. Senate Republicans have developed a proposal for COVID stimulus that would, among other things, reduce unemployment benefits from the federal government from $600 a week to $200 a week. Democrats in the House have said that's a non-starter for them. Joining us today is Representative Dan Kildee. He's a Democrat representing Michigan's 5th Congressional District. Congressman Kildee, welcome back to Stateside.
Thank you for having me on.
Can you lay out for us what is in the House Democrats' plan for the future of unemployment benefits over the near term?
Sure. Well, you know, we passed our legislation over 2 months ago to extend the unemployment benefits. In fact, it was my legislation that was included in the HEROES Act, which extends unemployment through January. Our sense was that if it was a good idea a few months ago at the beginning of this crisis to make sure that people had the financial resources they need if they lost their job in order to follow the medical advice that they're being given, it's a good idea then, it's a good idea now. We still have tens of millions of Americans unemployed with no real prospect of going back to work. And that unemployment benefit has not only been good for those families, it's been good for the whole economy. It has helped keep our economy afloat. It's helped others from not losing their jobs because of the loss of the demand in the economy that would result from taking away those benefits. So, you know, we passed our bill and we've just been waiting and waiting and waiting for the Senate to do something, and they still haven't. So, you know, we're ready to work with them, but we have to work from something.
Some of us know people, and the president has really leaned in on this point, who are collecting more in their unemployment benefits in this moment than they would if they were to return to work. And Republicans have argued that that setup may keep people tied in unemployment, even as conditions are evolving with COVID. How do you address that argument that it may be more profitable for some people to stay home in this moment?
Well, I understand the argument. I understand it from a theoretical standpoint. But the truth of the matter is, for the majority of people, that's not the case. And there is a reason that we decided on a flat rate benefit at $600, which was supported by virtually every Democrat and every Republican when we first voted for it. And the reason was that we knew it would be impossible, given the volume of cases, to go to what's called replacement rate unemployment benefits, where an individual calculation for each person who's unemployed would have to be made by the unemployment agency in order to get them the benefit that equals their pay.
My understanding, though, is that that's difficult for the states to put into effect. Have you heard anything from Governor Whitmer about that?
Yeah, we, from our understanding, and this is talking not only to Governor Whitmer's team, but to unemployment agency directors from around the country, is that it would take about 3 months to implement. And so, you know, for somebody who's wealthy, who can afford to carry that as a receivable, I'd say, wait 3 months to get your money. Well, you can't wait 3 months to eat. You can't wait 3 months to pay your rent. You can't wait 3 months to take care of your kids. You can't wait 3 months to pay the water bill. So why would we make you wait 3 months to get your unemployment benefit? Just because it's possible that somebody making unemployment would be getting slightly more than they got if they were working. You know, I find it somewhat offensive that some of the greatest critics of this are people who have orchestrated tax legislation that has allowed companies to game the tax system to massively increase their profits, to get far more than they otherwise would have. But they're somehow offended if somebody's getting $90 more a week than they were getting when they were on the job. And it's a small minority of the people who are unemployed. So, you know, the outrage that the opponents of this are expressing is a little hard to take when you think about the economic policies that they have ushered in.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about education matters. We are running headlong into a Michigan school year with a pretty piecemeal approach across the board. And we've been speaking with educators both up north and in southern parts of Michigan that are more densely populated. Do you feel at this point this is just a reality of the pandemic, that every region is going to have to do what's safe in their area? Or do you see this as a problem with leadership and maybe a lack of support for school districts?
Well, I think it's a combination. Number one, we should make the decisions that are based on good science. If the science tells us that we would put children and families at risk of spreading the disease by having a full return to school, well, then we shouldn't do it. We can always make up for the time that these kids might lose. We can come up with other ways of getting them educational experiences through the virtual platforms that are available. But you can't bring somebody back to life who gets sick and dies as a result of exposure. We just have to accept the fact that there's no one to blame. This is a tough time. You know, I wish the federal government had done a better job, but the virus is going to do what it's going to do. We can't wish it away or tweet it away. We have to address it head on using good science. And if that science says, let's not have large gatherings, we shouldn't. And that includes school children. If the president is so concerned about bringing people together that he cancels his own precious Republican National Convention, for goodness sakes, he can't very well argue that children and teachers should put themselves at risk because he wants to get them back to school. You know what? If it's too dangerous for him, it's too dangerous for them.
Right now, 2/3 of the K-12 emergency funding in the relief bill that Senate Republicans have put forth would be reserved for schools that are physically reopening and doing some kind of in-person instruction. How firm do you think that is?
It's hard to say because with the president and with the Senate Republicans, it's not clear what their ultimate position might be. I think in some cases, he may be just trying to make a point. But look, I think local school districts and local school boards, along with their state departments of education, are in the best position to decide what the safe thing to do would be. And I don't think the federal government should try to create incentives for school districts to make decisions that are not based on the health of the people that they serve. They should make a decision based on the health needs of the community. And the federal government ought not punish them because they make a decision that ultimately could save lives and that they perceive to be in the best interest of that particular community.
Do you think that there is some possibility for the federal government to act right now on behalf of parents? There's some real fear now from parents who feel like they're standing on shifting sands with respect to their kids' school year. We just talked to an educator from up north who said that she's got concerns about kids being left at home alone, smaller kids. Is it appropriate for the federal government to make some response in situations where families are struggling to juggle work and being teachers at home?
Yeah, I think it's not only appropriate, I think it's necessary. You know, some months ago, the president said that he feels like he's a wartime president. Well, if we're going to fight this war against this virus, we need to use every tool that we have available to do it. And, you know, this is how the federal government protects its citizens. We have an obligation to protect them. If that means additional support for smaller group childcare, for example, which is something that we're voting on today, we should do that. If it means providing direct support to school districts to support distance learning, we should do that. If it means making sure that those families aren't forced to choose between taking care of their families safely or trying to support them by finding work outside of the home, we ought to give them that choice. You know, the unemployment benefit, like I said, and this is really central to this whole issue, the unemployment benefit is intended to keep these families afloat and keep the U.S. economy from collapsing. And I think that's fundamentally what has to happen. In order for a family to not lose everything that they've worked for, they've got to be able to pay their bills. And I think that is sort of the fundamental first obligation we have in a crisis, in a war, to make sure that we don't put people at unnecessary risk.
I know it feels like we've been in triage mode since March, but have you given thought to how long we as Americans will be paying for the stimulus that's being racked up at this time?
Yeah, absolutely. And the reality that we face is that we're going to be paying for it for a while. We will pay for it if we get this wrong and we don't support families and businesses and the economy and we go into an economic collapse. That's the worst case scenario, because not only will there be a lot of immediate economic harm, but the United States financial situation will be much worse if we allow that to happen. There is not a choice that says this doesn't come with a high cost. The question is, how do we want to pay for it? Do we want to pay for it by supporting families, or do we want to pay for it by allowing those families to lose everything and pay in a way that's not just financial, but has long-term implications, generational poverty, for example? So I think we have no choice that does not come with a high cost.
Dan Kildee represents Michigan's 5th Congressional District. Congressman, we've got to go, but thanks for your time.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.